After speaking yesterday about the second rank, the universal within the phenomenal, or the equality within differences, I didn't get to talk about the verse, and I just want to briefly connect the verse, because in some ways it elucidates further the point that I was making in our discussions of the, let us call it, the story and analogy of Anyadatta, of discovering one's own head. Remember, the equality within differences, or within diversity, or the universal, the absolute within the phenomenal, is really talking about, not really, is talking about seeing and experiencing things, beings, and oneself as not two. Seeing directly this in our life and in our functioning. That's why it was called jeweled mirror samadhi by some. And as I said, that's the original set of verses out of which the five ranks are a concentrated elucidation and I won't say explanation, but outline of the steps of practice, seeing all that we encounter as exactly this true self of who and what we are. So, what's especially interesting is in this second set of verses. Well, there are two English interpretations that I like, and in one sense they interpret the original Chinese very differently, and in another sense they express the intent of the verses very directly, even as they use different words to express this that we are. And that's important for us, because one aspect of our practice is how not to get trapped by words and how to see when we are, because it's always what the words are expressing and clarifying. Okay, so the first, this is the relative containing the absolute. That's one way to put it. Or at dawn, an ignorant old woman finds her ancient mirror, wherein she clearly sees her face, which cannot be elsewhere. No more will she reject her head by grasping at its shadow. Notice how much this segues from yesterday's story of Anyadatta losing his, her head and then finding it. I'll read it once more and then we'll go to the other. At dawn, an ignorant old woman finds her ancient mirror, wherein she clearly sees her face, which cannot be elsewhere. No more will she reject her head by grasping at its shadow. This is the expression of this state. The second verse for this. The second set of verses for this, which is the absolute within the relative, or the universal within the phenomenal, is a bleary old granny chanced upon an ancient mirror. She peered straight into it, but saw no likeness at all. Pity such a muddlehead would try to find an image there. A bleary old granny chanced upon an ancient mirror. She peered straight into it, but saw no likeness at all. Pity such a muddlehead would try to find an image there. This is, again, a translation of the very same Chinese verse, praising and clarifying this fundamental state of absolute within relative. So, all are finding, speaking of the phenomenal world, the relative, your work, your practice, your life, all is you within your life. And though this body mind fallen away body mind is a wonderful state. A wonderful state because it's, as I said, Buddha seeing Buddha with own eyes in everything that we encounter. Yet, if we stick there, if we think, oh, this is so great, I'm taking care of everything, then we're in trouble. But why? Because we don't see that really what our life and life practice is about, and if I say it in such a way, is using our life opportunity and efforts to create whatever this we want to call this Buddha life, this life of practice, or we could not use such words, even such stinky words, but a life in which we and all we encounter can be exactly as and who we are. We don't do that because we don't see that that's really our task, which is what the next stage is, which is called coming from within the universal, or could be said, stated as the universal, the absolute alone, or the surgence of the absolute, or of the equality. But since I know I might end up talking and not getting to the verse, I'm going to read the verse first and maybe come to it a little bit later. The verse for this, or one, no, I should compare these, I didn't compare them, but I think that within nothingness exists a way beyond the worldly dust. Don't break the taboo of using names that cannot be spoken. Your eloquence will surpass that of the man whose father pierced his tongue. Well, we don't need to go father pierced his tongue because that's a long ancient Chinese myth. So here we'll have another translation of that verse. Actually, there's another translation. Do I like that? This one, I think. There is a path in the midst of nothingness. Only by not infringing upon the taboo of the forbidden name of the emperor will you be able to surpass once again the genius of the tongue-cutting orator of a past dynasty. Again, there's that past. Or, hard though it is be There is a way to keep free from dust. Keeping free from dust keeps coming up. Today's ability to avoid what is forbidden surpasses yesterday's most eloquent discussion. Now, this avoiding what's forbidden, not breaking the taboo, in a way is very important. It's very important because it emphasizes something in our practice that we miss sometimes in our, what should I say, in our self-excitement about our practice and our accomplishments. We need to be careful about not saying too much. Not saying too much in our own life about our practice. Not saying too much to ourselves and not saying too much to others. Meaning, not saying it in ways that are obvious and spell things out. See, in a way, I shouldn't be saying too much here as well. See, what is the path leading away from the dust? Can't be too explanatory with it. What are, do we find as dusts in our life? Leading away from dust so that our ordinary activity becomes for us and for everyone we encounter an expression of this coming from the universal equality, the universal absolute that we all share. Not by saying something about it, certainly not thinking that I have it and they don't. They, meaning people, they meaning all sorts of beings in all sorts of realms, physical and others, all sorts of states of being that arise for us. See, if we see that everything is nothing but this wisdom, then every state of body-mind that arises, whether we like it, whether we don't like it, whether we think it, we shouldn't have to face this, whether, and go on and so forth. And the same with everyone we encounter, not just persons, but physical conditions of all sorts of beings, trees, rocks, wooden floors, dirty toilets, cars that are going the wrong way as far as we're concerned. See? How do we see clearly that there's no defilement in them? Of course, I'm explaining too much, but see, what is it to live? How do we live and function free of dusts? Each of these states, even though here it's set out as 3, 4, 5 ranks and accomplishments, in a way, each of us has each of these opportunities to practice and to manifest our practice, which only means live our life and manifest our life. See, how is it to be in this no defilement true nature of our life, meaning no state that it arises in our life and in the life of everyone we encounter is a defilement. Yet there are constant opportunities to manifest the way, or as to have our eloquence surpass those who are speaking despite not having the ability, or surpassing yesterday's most eloquent discussion. See, that's, if you think of the way the this Chinese image surpasses the genius of the tongue-cutting orator of the past dynasty, which means someone who was praised for being able to orate, to express and clarify, despite the fact that he had his tongue cut, his tongue pierced. See, that's the thing. Because he had to do it, he was able to find a way to do it. Even though on the surface of it, it seems impossible. See, this is what our practice is to go beyond the ideas and limits that we set for ourselves and our life and our functioning, because we are beyond the ideas and limits that we set for our life. The limits that we set are that dualism that inherently cuts off our life and inherently in its self-centeredness makes us not see who we are from the beginning. In our definition of the limitations of body-mind, we automatically will miss who we are. Which is why our Zazen, whether we talk of this Zazen in sitting or our Zazen in all functioning, is going beyond the ideas and the limits of what we think should, shouldn't, is, isn't. Not by adding a new set of ideas or even insights, but in our realizing it for ourself in with our life. With our life. See? That's why Dogen's body, mind, fallen away, then fallen away body, mind. Fallen away body, mind manifests, comes forth. See, so it's not how not to say, but the point is how to say without words, how to say with words that we don't use, but rather as explanations, but rather expounding directly, responding directly to the circumstance, so then we could use words freely. Or use all sorts of other circumstances. That's why you could have two poems that the first set that I read that seemingly are opposite and yet express the same point. If I were to say it in a very simple phrase, it's doing completely whatever we're doing. Doing ourself completely in whatever we're doing. See, then we don't have to say anything. Saying is extra. Saying gets in the way. Then all sorts of circumstances. If I use stinky words, then we are emptiness itself. Then our life expounds more than any talk that we add about it. It's not just what we're doing, but in doing it, being it each moment, then our life even is beyond anything the Buddha can touch or the Buddha can do. So then, like with the story of Anyadatta, it's just dreams about our difficulties and dreams about what's not so. So, but remember, yesterday I talked a little about, or was it the day before, I don't remember, intrinsic and experiential. We're here talking not just on the level of intrinsic, but on the level of experiential and on the level of deepening the experiential. Okay. I think I've talked enough on in this way, and maybe we can explore this a little more together, and in that exploration there can be some elucidation for you. Okay. Of this matter. Again, this level is the coming from within the universal, or coming from within the absolute, depending. Again, it's interesting for me. I know some of you don't find it that interesting to see how translators, all of whom are good translators, will use slightly different ways in English to say it. In a way, freeing us up from limits of our language, even if we only speak English. Hearing it coming from within the universal or the absolute, or calling it coming from the midst of equality, or the equality alone, or the absolute alone. Each of those has a slightly different flavor, a slightly different perspective on what's so. So, I will stop now, and maybe you might have something to say to clarify this life of non-separation. See, that's what this is talking about, coming from within the equality. It's the life of non-dualism, non-division. That doesn't mean some sort of magical state, but it means our ordinary functioning. And within that, of course, there's you and you and he and her and she and so on and so forth. Okay. Yes, Jojo.
The other 2 days, last couple days.
Yes.
That first one was the relative and the absolute, and the second one was the absolute and the relative.
Okay.
And now this was
right.
Just the absolute itself without any relative?
No, it's not without. It's coming from within. It's either the absolute alone is one way to put it, or the coming from within the absolute, or the equality, or coming from within the universal. Different ways to translate it. And the next one will be either arriving at mutual integration, if it's the Rinzai way, and if it's the Soto way, which is the older way, it'll be the relative alone, so that's the next one. And then the final one is the integration of relative and absolute, integration of let's see how he phrases it, mutual integration attained. So that's what they are. Now remember, they're all on the level of one, what's intrinsically so, and two, on the level of what's experientially so for you, me, each of us, as a practice accomplishment or state. That looks like that made you more confused. Okay, let's go again. I'll keep it one way of saying it. First is relative in the absolute. Next is the absolute within the relative. But though we say that, it's still not quite all. So the next step is the absolute alone. The next step is the relative alone. The next is the integration of relative and absolute, or complete integration. So in a sense, as I said, this today, the absolute alone, is the step further from your practice being your accomplishment to, if we say it such a way, the functioning of bodhisattvahood, of, if we call it, creating the conditions of liberation from suffering, from attachment, from delusion in every encounter you have, in every, with every being you have. Not by telling them things, but in your functioning and response to them. And them is not just people. Them is all sorts of beings. Them is all sorts of states that arise, so-called within you, so-called without you, so-called states of hot, cold, feeling good, feeling bad, being sick, dying, etc., etc. All sorts of states, physical, emotional, mental, etc., etc. These are just ways of talking about the myriad states of being human, the myriad states of being Buddhas, which is myriad beings. Endless dimensions of life that we have access to in our life, in our daily life, in our daily encounters, whether we call it so-called inside, so-called outside, doesn't make a difference.
So I could be wrong, I probably am, but it seems like we lose the relative. Even though we notice it, we lose a relative in the absolute.
That's a nice way to put it. Not so much lose in the sense of loss.
Right, yeah, I don't mean like
yes, for it. But we don't get stuck with it. We don't stick to it. Now, remember, it's always, relative is just a term. It's a way of describing, it's a particular perspective. And we started out with saying that most of the time, most of us, most people we encounter, start out living just in the world from the point of view of the relative. And as a result of that comes greed, anger, ignorance, attachment, harm, suffering, because there is inherently in living out of the relative, or the differences, or the phenomenal, there is inherently a dualism that we perpetuate, and not only perpetuate, but reinforce, encrust, strengthen. And it becomes the basis of all sorts of stress, suffering, harm, and so forth. All coming out of our misconstruing what our life is, has always been from the beginning.
In other words, we draw lines and borders where there's none actually exist.
Yes. If you want to say it in that graphic sense, yes. That's right. And we can, as I said yesterday, talking a little about bacteria, and that just on that kind of level, in health and public sanitation, how lines and borders, which we assumed were right, just perpetuated all sorts of disease and death. Just on that simple level. Now we're talking on, in a sense, if I say it in such a way, a much deeper level. And we're talking about it in the sense for us to see how we are doing it over and over, how it seems natural for us to do it over and over, how it seems what everyone else is doing, so we are reminded and reinforced in doing it, and how the consequences keep coming up, and how the, let's say, the habits and I'll say reactive habits, but forces of what being human is tend to constantly redraw those lines. Even as we dissipate some, we redraw others, and we don't see how we're drawing them, to use what you just said. Are we going in the same place? Good. Very simply, if we sit zazen, we discover both the drawing of lines, and we both discover the permeability and the non-validity, if I say it in that way, of the lines, in more than just a temporary provisional sense for us. But we also discover how many ways we can, it seems natural for the lines to exist, even in dreams, even in waking up and half being awake, in much less in our fantasies and mind agitation and other kinds of mind chatter. Do you want to take this further, or are you satisfied? Good.
I mean, not that I understand that.
That's no need. Don't worry about understanding. Just do. See, that's why our practice isn't... I don't bring this up, and our practice isn't to give us another set of relative rules and differences, which is what understanding and on this level is. This is why our practice is not about saying certain things, but it's in our life doing. That's why it's about experiential. Experiential isn't about understanding. Even though there is and can be an understanding component, that's not where you go for it. To use a simple example, you could get an understanding of why and how to cook certain food, why you use a certain recipe, and why you put a certain menu together for a meal. But if that's what you offer people when they come to your house for dinner, they're not going to be very satisfied, and after a few days you're going to be starving to death if that's all you get. So you have to get the ingredients, prepare them, chop them, cook them, serve them, and then you have to keep chewing them to digest them. Then maybe, as they digest and become more part of you and you become part of them, then there's some satisfaction and nurturing. And then that enables your all the more functioning with all sorts of other beings. You have both the energy and the capacity to function, because you've absorbed that nutrition, that food that you prepared. So in some sense, you can think of this as chopping up the food and in starting to describing the process of preparing it, chopping it, cooking it, washing it, all the things that you do, cooking it, eating, serving it, eating it, the different ways to serve it, the different courses that need to be served for the full meal to nurture us and for us to have the experience, so that when we get up from the meal, we can continue the functioning that the meal has enabled, because we've had experientially know the meal for what it is. Then we can continue to make it possible for such meals to be served for all beings that we encounter in our functioning. because our life keeps serving us meals of all sorts. That's what our energy is, whether it's in terms of food or breath or in terms of the very life force that we are, is the ability to function in this way. That's the opportunity of being human.
You don't have to understand how that happens.
For some people, there's a value to understanding. For some people, it's secondary and not necessary. For some people, aiming at the understanding gets in the way of the rest of it. You can become a connoisseur of menu collections and have a whole collection of cookbooks and menus and all sorts of other things. And, you know, if that's where it goes for you, then you have a room full of books. But if the Doksan room was just about coming in and opening up a book and reading it to you, and you reading it in there and coming out, that's not much practice. So, understanding is fine. Understanding comes when it comes in the ways it does. But understanding is understanding of the experience, not understanding as a substitute for experiencing. Knowing words about practice is not a substitute for practice. It's a guide and maybe a reflection of it, and maybe it grows out of it. See, so that's what this is. These words, whether we talk about jeweled mirrors, samadhi, or the identity of relative and absolute, which you know as the sandokai, that you've probably chanted in some of the other temples. We don't use it here very often, but I'm sure you are familiar with it. They are descriptions, and then this is further distillation of it so that it supports our practice. So it supports us in being what we're doing, in not living a life of separation, but living a life of being the Buddha that we are, encountering the Buddhas that we encounter, or the Buddha nature, if we use that word, with our eyes and ears and hands and feet in all our functioning. See, that's all we do. We handle Buddha nature all the time. We eat Buddha nature, we hear Buddha nature, we see and smell Buddha nature. Which is our own nature. But enough, too much. So, thank you. Yes, David.
I don't know if I've missed this or not, but let me just express what I think, or what I'm hearing.
Yes.
It sounds to me like this rank is skillful expression of the absolute as compassionate practice.
Yes. Yes. If you want, in someone's comment on it, is going forth unconditionally, you manifesting, well, he gets very, what should I say, eloquent, carried forward by the four great and pure vows into an ocean of Dharma and unrestricted activity, whipping the Dharma wheel forward, attaining deeper attainment above for himself while helping other sentient beings below. How's that for a very strong, see, this is means doesn't mean going forth and talking. It means in our functioning, it means in our sitting and in our encounters with all beings. And we do it not because we've got something to give someone else, but because, remember, the step before this was seeing that everything we encounter is our own face, everyone we encounter, not our own inner personal me versus them, but our own in the sense of the no separation life, our own in the sense of what we always are. See, that's, as I said yesterday, that's where Dogen uses the expression myriad dharmas, myriad phenomena come forward and actualize the self, actualize what's real. That's what Dogen, this is in Genjo Koan, many of you are familiar with this, where he uses that phrase to describe, call it awakening, call it enlightenment, whatever. I don't remember what, depends again how you translate Dogen's Japanese word in Genjo Koan. Of course, Genjo Koan is written in Japanese. So,
yeah. To take your Germanology just a little bit further, would that be, instead of telling people who don't know that you have to do it this way because this is the best way to do it, simply show them that if you do it this way.
It could be. It could be doing it with them. It depends what's skillful and appropriate, and there isn't a formula. There isn't a formula, and yet it's a matter of seeing. No. It's a matter of in our being manifesting the doing of it. Of course, we shouldn't get stuck in the germ analogy because we are nothing but a home for germs, and we are nothing but germ life inside and outside, on our skin and in our intestines and all the rest. We couldn't live without the, if I use the expression, flora and fauna that we're home to, more beings than we could count in several hours, just fill our whole body and make it, without which we would be dead. In some ways, there's discoveries recently that we sometimes eat certain foods and do certain things because various gut bacteria and other bacteria want them. And therefore, we somehow get these nerve impulses and desires to eat certain things because these guts in this space wants this and these guts in that place need that. And so on and so forth. But I, you know, I'm generalizing from, what should I call, recent scientific findings, but the scientists among you might say I'm being too loose with the facts, or it needs to be interpreted more narrowly. But that's how I see it. Plus, each of us are universes of different kinds of bacteria and other flora and fauna, and different parts of our body. I mean, different parts of our mouth have different flora and fauna, and different parts of our guts and our other so-called internal organs, and of course external organs. I won't leave it. Enough. Okay. Thank you. But all of this, I speak this way as encouragement for us in our practice life, because the only place we have difficulties in our life functioning is in our divisions and separations, in our holding to the differences, the particularities that we believe about self and other, about our various self states. We believe certain things about the phenomena that arise. Phenomena means mental, physical, emotional, and every other way we talk about. And the phenomena that arise with others in their behavior. Others can be those near to us, those far away, those that are human, those that we just see from a distance, etc., etc., which can be human, of course, as well. Or those that when we sit, we have imaginary worlds that appear in our present moment. All sorts of imaginations. And on one hand, we don't have to pay them any heed. On the other hand, we welcome them all arising and being this experiencing, we experience, if I use the word, more clearly what's so in this world of no dusts, in this world where dusts can't arise, and yet somehow we seem to be very dusty.
Just one more thing to add. It sounds like when at the beginning of Sesshin, the timekeeper says that it's important that we all function as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it sounds like to me.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we have our own proclivities and idiosyncrasies and, you know, whatever.
Yes.
So, but, you know, I don't know. That's, I'm still just trying to understand it.
Yeah.
But even without understanding what that means, we still have to function as a whole.
Right, and as we function as a whole, we have a sense of how we are a whole. See? Not knowing what it means isn't what's important or not important. In a sense, knowing what it means is secondary to being what it is. See? If we're being a whole, then the knowing what it means might or might not arise, but that's secondary. Because our functioning as a whole is because we are a whole. And it's simplified in Sesshin, whether it's a whole Zendo or a whole Zen center that's functioning during Samu or at other times. Where we resist it, we often can see very clearly. It's because, oh, I want to take a break now. Oh, this and that. There we're resisting being whole. Just like, imagine if our guts said, well, I'm going to take a day off today and I'm not going to digest any of the food he or she sends to me. We'd have stomach aches all day. Sometimes that happens. Again, not functioning as a whole. There's all sorts of wholes that we are, whether it's a whole group of people doing Zazen, or a whole city that functions together, or a whole planet that functions together, or a whole group of beings of all sorts. My son is interested in, I'm going to say this wrong, mycorrhizal, which is the kind of growths on the edge, and he's also interested in fungi, various forms of fungi that I think mycorrhizal is a form, growths that are on the ends of roots of trees that and other kinds of plants that enable them to digest and transform various elements in the soil so that the trees and plants can make use of the minerals and other things that are in them. And in their how they, I'll use a word, communicate with each other and various other things. I have limited understanding of this, but you know, it's all of this functioning as a whole, that you know, the soil, the trees, all the various levels of beings that make it possible for water and the minerals and other parts of the soil to transform themselves into being absorbed by these very minute structures at the ends of the roots, and then being absorbed by the trees, and then coming up and joining the sun in functioning as life, joining the sun that comes from all that distance. I remember Thich Nhat Hanh, I think he died recently. I might be wrong. I know he was very, very ill, but actually I think he died. I somewhere was talking about that if to really appreciate a piece of food is to appreciate the sun that's in the food, the rain that's in the, so let us say a piece of bread is to appreciate the sun that grew, that transformed itself into the wheat plant, and the wheat that transformed the water into the flour, into the bread. You could do it with all sorts of things. We're an endless internetwork, interbeing connection of all sorts of forms of this, if I use the word, pure Dharma body that we all share. Except when we create and hold on to divisions and separations and value some and disparage others. Then we don't see this interbeing that is our life. We don't see this endless dimensions. See, then we miss, as Dogen says, this being time moment. I shouldn't say moment, this being time right now. Being time right now of the whole universe. That's what Zazen is. So when we sit Zazen, our Zazen is being time of this endless dimension universe. That's what we say, ongoing change is Buddha nature. Ongoing change is exactly our nature. See? Then attachment and clinging and the resulting suffering doesn't blind us. That's what your Zazen is. Not some daydream or some little thing of taking care of immediate problems. And yet, it's this small immediate effort according to what's here. And if it's the being attached and caught up in mind chatter, it's noticing and making the appropriate effort to work with that, whether it's noticing, labeling it, whether it's working with the koan with it, whether it's opening up right here now this breath that extends in endless dimensions and directions at this moment, just in this chest, extending all the places, nowhere need to think about, but entering into the present moment. Intimacy and appreciation of the present breath. No one has anything more to say, so I did read the poem, so thank you. I was looking to see if I was supposed to do something else.
No, you got it.
Thank you.
Copyright Elihu Genmyo Smith.